All right, Craig, are we actually recording? Are you done thinking?
You better be recording.
I see that look on his face, man. He's definitely still thinking hard.
He should be thinking. We don't pay him to think.
Yeah, I guess he pressed the button. Whatever. So, we're back.
Your job is just to press buttons.
We're back.
That just sums up like most jobs nowadays.
It's Homer Simpson, okay? We employ Homer Simpson. That actually
reminds me of one of my most favorite Homer Simpson jokes.
Which is?
Remember the episode where he got, like, obscenely obese and had to get put on a workman's comp?
I know, but there's so many Simpsons episodes I've never seen.
So first off, becoming obscenely obese and becoming morbidly obese at a point where he needed to actually get get like medical assistance and get disability was only 300 pounds. So just let that sink in.
Oh, wow. Okay. I know a lot of people that could make that.
Right. Me included. And then so one of the things that they did for him is they let him work from home. Okay. So, you know, he's a nuclear safety operator at the facility, and he's basically working from home now. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
So that's kind of a joke in and of itself, but something that we have a friend that actually legitimately does that. So
yeah,
not much of a joke now. But pretty much the computer was prompting him in like that old school, like 1980s mono green colored monitor. It's like, do you wish to flush the valves? Y-E, yes. Enter. Yay, it does. Do you want to do this? Y-E, yes. Enter. Yay, it did that thing. And so then he accidentally just types in Y, enter, and it goes through with the command as a yes. So he turns, so Marge comes in, she goes, homie, how's it going? And he turns to her and goes, great, I've increased my productivity by 3 times.
Yep.
And now we have ChatGPT running things.
Yeah, exactly. It's only a matter of time.
Hey, ChatGPT, give me the worst magic item. I'll come back later.
Yeah, I would imagine if whatever you're doing, you just have to type Y, enter. I'm pretty sure you could just write a script to do that for you.
You can write a script to do most things now.
Yeah, I know. You never even have to actually show up for work.
Oh.
Better hope we don't live near a nuclear plant with that happening, though. So, as I attempted to say, we're back. Just the two of us this week, the Grumpy Dungeon Masters. I'm Jay, and my co-host is Chris.
Topher.
Christopher. Yeah. Chris, last name Topher.
there's sometimes people go by the name Christoph.
Like, oh, yeah.
No, it's...
Yeah, I don't... Topher. I don't know any Christophs. I've never met a Christoph.
I haven't met a Christoph yet either. If you are Russian and your name is Christoph, we love you. Don't hurt us.
Thank you for listening. If your name is Christoph, we appreciate you.
Yeah, sign off in the chat.
Yeah, let us know in Discord if that's your name.
So we got a couple topics to talk about. We haven't really done one of these in a little while.
Yeah, it feels like it's been forever since we've actually done just a podcast of the two of us.
Yeah. Oh, it's been like 3 weeks, 4 weeks.
No, it's been like 2 weeks because we talked to Luke, then we did a podcast of just the two of us, and then we talked to Kenzer Co.
No, you were sick that week.
No. Maybe.
I'm pretty sure it was Luke, and then you were sick. And so I did it with a player, and then...
Could be. Well, we talked to Jeff Ashworth, followed by Luke Gygax immediately. Yeah. And then there was a podcast.
Then, then you were sick, and then...
Yeah. Well, I guess it has been a month.
So we have a month's worth of topics to kind of get through and talk about.
No, because I made you do a podcast where we talked about the UA.
Oh, yeah. Warlock, Snorlock. Yep, I remember that. Whatever.
We're getting old, man. Our memory doesn't work great.
What?
It's fun being a DM.
So what I know there's a couple topics we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about Big B's and the book coming out and a couple things associated with that.
Yeah.
We want to talk about really bad magic items. I have a story from my players. from Adventures League. So where do you want to go first? We got really grumpy to really funny.
Oh, you know me. I'm a comedy guy. I love funny. Let's do it.
All right. So the really funny story then. I still laugh about this.
Is this one of those men in tights funny stories where it's actually terrible and then you're just going to tell it in a funny manner to make it seem hilarious?
No, this is a new player playing the rogue the worst way possible.
Oh, there's hundreds of these. I'm all for it. Let's do it.
There's hundreds of these. This is a great one. So, I've been still running Adventure League at my local gaming shop, Zenergy Gaming, here in Charleston, South Carolina. Zenergy-gamers.com. Cobra Grumpy, 5% off, all that good stuff. And I was actually sick 1 week, and there were supposed to be two new players that were actually going to be there. So I couldn't make it, and I had a friend of mine fill in for me. And he did a fantastic job. He ran some little homebrew thing, and the two new players had a good time. Well, the next week, only one of the new players came back. The other one is out of town for a little while. So I was like, all right, that's fine. What kind of character did you roll up? And he tells me I rolled up a rogue. And the second he said that, I turned to one of the normal players and goes, did he play that rogue exactly like every other new person plays a rogue? And he went, yes, he did. So I was like, okay, great. We're going to have to figure this one out. So, in keeping with Adventure League rules, I had to run something, and we were in the middle of keys from the Golden Vault, so I couldn't really do that because it's level 5. I didn't want to just throw him at level 5 stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to run Dragons of Stormwreck Isle, and it's something that's been on my list to run. It's levels 1 through 3 compared to Phandelver, the starter kit, which is 1 through 5 and then has all that extra stuff you can play through later. But overall, I was like, you know what, this should be perfectly fine. This will be enough. And there's only like 3 kind of mini dungeons and you're done.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit of random encounters, mostly with just zombies. So I'm kind of adding in this extra big zombie threat that's on the island. But anyways, so they are traveling there. They get into a fight with a sea monster, and I give the flare that after they beat the sea monster, they're on the ship, and the ship gets sunk in a storm, and they wind up on the beach of this island called Dragon's Rest. Okay?
All right.
Or Stormwreck Isle. And there is a temple Bahamut that all of them are trying to go to for one reason or another, and I tell them to give me their reasons, and they do. And they kind of basically start making their way to Dragon's Rest. I have them fight a bunch of zombies. Most of the players are all experienced players, so I'm making the fight really hard, and I'm giving the newbie kind of like a crash course in D&D tactics, you know? Like,
right.
Don't split the party. Don't fight 2-1. Get an advantage. You know, the things that you need to know that aren't really discussed in the rule book.
Yeah, when running away, make sure you run towards the party, not away from the party. Things like that.
And so the things are going through relatively fine. They fight, I think, like 6 or 8 zombies at level 1, which is a hell of a fight.
Level 1, that's rough.
Yeah, especially since I kept making all of my checks.
Yeah, the resave, whatever the fuck they call that, from zombies that just won't die.
Yeah, so the zombies were not dying, but they did well, and they won the fight. And so they went, and they did a short rest, and then I had them fight a tiger, and then they just decimated the fucking tiger, man. I mean, just like, I expected this thing to take down a couple players, and it did actually pounce on somebody and take them out immediately. But I expected the two to actually struggle to fight the guy and like pick him up and have it be all like cinematic and, you know, hard to do.
My initial thought when you said you let them fight a tiger was, if the tiger gets a good initiative, somebody's screwed.
Yeah, that's what happened exactly.
If it goes last, it's probably just dead.
Well, it went first, and it took out the fighter in like the breastplate. So
yeah,
it decimated him. He just looked at me and went, "You're an asshole." It's not my fault the tiger rolled a 19 initiative and you have a 10.
A tiger is not a massive threat even at level one in D&D, but yeah, it hits hard enough to kill somebody.
It's a D10.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Bonus action. Yeah.
Yeah, it absolutely hits hard enough to kill somebody, but it doesn't have enough hit points to sustain itself through a round of attacks.
So I made it a zombie tiger.
Oh no! Of course you did.
Of course I did. And the tiger did not die. Holy crap! Did the tiger not die? I'm passing all the checks, and they're hitting it as hard as they can. They even like. I think they crit it, but the guy rolled low, and that should have taken it out, but I didn't remember that shit should have taken out, and they didn't correct me, so I didn't catch myself on that. So the tiger basically beat them all, which is fine. This is the newbie module. There actually is a something already built in for the players to actually like lose and then kind of like show up in Dragon's Rest to introduce them to the rest of the NPCs.
Okay.
And that's kind of like what they built in. So I basically had them let them lose, but had them wake right back up and basically meet the NPCs that they have to do, which is one female carekeeper in Dragon's Rest, which is a temple to Bahamut, and her little kobold clergy? Whatever you call a bunch of kobolds, a pack.
I call it a pack of
Bahamut-based religious kobolds.
All right.
So they're having a good old time. They're talking.
Call it a revelry.
So they're having fun and they're chatting it up. And then Rogue, okay, decides the best action for him to do.
I already know where this goes, but yeah.
The Rogue decided the best thing to do would be to sneak up behind the statue to Bahamut, which is what looks to be like a human male with 7 canaries on his arms and shoulders. And his best idea is to take that little shiny bird and steal one. So he climbs up behind the statue and tries to break one off, and he can't. And tries to break another one off, and it works. And he snaps the canary off the statue to Bahamut. I let him do that, and the second that he got a good athletics check, I was going to make it difficult. I set the DC at 18. All right. Right. Fucker rolls a 20. And his like plus 2 for whatever reason he had. So he steals a canary. And I'm like, shit. What do I do? So I breathe a very heavy sigh. And I walk over to the wall of miniatures that they're selling. I pull down the adult gold dragon miniature that they have up there. And I don't take them out of the box. I'm not going
to
buy
did you just purchase it on the spot?
I did that with the ancient white dragon, but not with the adult gold dragon. Mostly because it wasn't painted. If it was an actual mini, I probably would have. And my wife would have murdered me.
Yep.
And I set that right down behind him. And it says, the second you rip the canary off, this dragon appears behind you. Roll initiative. And he looks at me like, what the hell did I just do? I was like, well, one thing I forgot to mention was that he rolled really high in his, religion check.
Yeah.
So he knew it was a statue to Bahamut, and I explained to him what that meant and what Bahamut was. You know?
And it's not my fault. He's still a brand new player.
So he broke the thing off, they rolled initiative, and he got like really high. He got like a 17 or something like that, but I rolled really high too, and I got a 19. And we that dragon did his dragon's breath, and oddly enough, he saved.
How much damage did he still take?
Hold on. So there was a chance at this level, at level 1, okay? If the dragon's breath rolled all ones on the die, okay? He would have taken half of that damage and survived. Okay?
That would be the literal weakest dragon's breath from an adult dragon that has ever been rolled. In all of D&D, not just me or you, literal every DM who's ever rolled dragon's breath damage.
But there's a chance.
But there's a chance.
So I roll and I get average. I get 60. So he saves, takes 30 damage, and is just immediately incinerated by this gold dragon. And I use this as a learning opportunity. I had him basically get teleported to Bahamut's lair, and Bahamut is talking to him. But by the way, Bahamut's lair is this massive garden that he basically spends all his time in.
Yep.
And he likes to spend his time as human form, just like, you know, tending to the garden and whatnot. So that's pretty much what he did. He's basically walking through this garden, came across a gardener, and the gardener was talking to him. It's like, why did you steal that? Why are you trying to go to Bahamut's, you know, temple? What do you think Bahamut's going to do for you? And yada, yada, yada. And the kid's actually handling the role play really well. And eventually, Bahamut reveals himself to be Bahamut, and that it was less that he got incinerated and more that he just got teleported straight to Bahamut's sanctuary. And he wants to kind of like take this lost adventurer under his wing so he can help him find the true path that would actually mean something to him in his life. And he decided to basically re-roll his rogue into a sorcerer. He took the Draconic Bloodline.
Yeah, of course. Yep.
And he has a amulet on him now that basically is like a holy symbol to Bahamut. That pretty much just Bahamut's just keeping an eye on him through the symbol. And
yeah, Bahamut's not a vengeful god, but he is a watchful god.
Yeah, he is. So I thought that was a nice middle ground. You know, I wasn't gonna murder a kid on this like second game and turn him off of D&D forever.
I gotta say that actually didn't go how I was expecting. So you know, your story was that he breaks off part of a statue to steal it. My initial thought was, okay, he's gonna steal from the NPC, then he's gonna steal from the other players. Because that's what new player rogues tend to do.
I was told that he did do that on the first session.
So he's past that. Okay.
So he's past that. But he's still in the I gotta steal everything else kind of mentality. So I had fun. I think he had fun. He's been showing up quite a bit. And
well, you gave him a story thing that he could be interested in. You gave his character a little, I won't say backstory, but it's kind of like a backstory, you know? He's got a little something that his character would be interested in and care about.
That's really all I need for my players, too. It's just a little, like, what's the motivation for your character being here, and what does it want to accomplish in life? And
yeah,
if you make it too specific, it gets very hard to figure out. But if you're very general about it, then I can work with that.
Yeah, like I've started running the Oriental Adventures campaign, and the characters don't necessarily have motivation, as it were, like, you know, like this character does, but they all have backstories. They all have family members. They all are tied to a different clan. So every one of them actually has things that I can quickly and easily tie in story stuff to if I want. And things like that are useful for the DM. And I know players love having things from their own storylines get brought up along the way.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm trying to do with the Waterdeep campaign. You know, my wife's playing a drow bard. She wants to figure out what happened to the Church of Illustrae from the previous game where she slaughtered everybody in it.
Where her other character killed everybody. Yeah.
And then, you know, the other recurring character, Doc, is basically, why are there multiple Docs? So it's like, that's the only character thing you gave me to work from, is that you're playing the exact same character again. So now there are Doc clones everywhere. And then one died to the bunny. The other one died to the bunny. And then there is the ranger thief. Unfortunately, it was hard to really work in the the Wanderlust story that he kind of wanted. But so he rolled, he's a private investigator now. And he doubled down on the private investigator-ness. So all of his passives, investigation, perception, and history, are all 20.
Oh, so wow. Yeah,
that I don't like that much as a DM. I'm not going to take it from the player.
I mean, take it
away from the player, but it does kind of ruin a lot of like the hidden stuff because like you can just see it.
I think we've definitely talked about passives on here.
Yeah. And
if I want something to be hard to find and they have a passive of whatever, I'm still going to require a check. Like you're going to have to goddamn roll it.
Yeah. I mean, when I write stuff, there's things that I'm okay with. And there's verbiage that you can use when you're writing modules to basically, no matter how good that the player's passive is, this still requires an active check to figure out.
Yeah, like passive perception is not going to show you everything. It just isn't. Right. It means you're going to be aware more than everybody else in general. And I'd be more likely to allow somebody with a passive perception a check than I would with somebody with a much lower passive perception. But there is no given.
I need to double check it, but I know like the secret doors in Tomb of Annihilation were, I believe, set at an active check or as a 20 and a passive of a 22, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
which isn't that hard to get at 11.
But it still requires that roll.
No, there was an active value and a passive value.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were to basically have the higher passive value, you would just find it automatically versus the active being a much lower value.
Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of like a middle ground for it.
Yeah, but it does. It tends to require checks occasionally. It's not an automatic. You're going to get all of these.
Yeah. So they do mention here. So a secret door can be spotted by any character within 5 feet of it who has a passive wisdom perception score of 20 or higher, or with a search and successful DC 20 wisdom perception check. So if you wanted to basically say, hey, the 20 wisdom perception check will do it, and then up the passive, I think that's kind of a middle ground if you're that worried about it.
Well,
but then the players are building that and taking feats to get that way. So just give it to them.
Yeah. Well, it also is interesting because you said a player within 5 feet.
Yeah.
So that's a passive thing. You know, you have to be within 5 feet to get that passive check to start with. But if you're across the room, I might allow you to make a roll for it.
Yeah. So I guess in that kind of scenario, you can basically say, like, are you going to search you're going to walk in every square and try to find it, or are you just going to look around?
Yeah. Like if it's a 20 by 20 room with, you know, the entrance in the middle and the exit in the middle, that player may not ever walk within 5 feet of that thing.
Yep. But then you're spending all that time moving and meeting every square. Like, do I see anything? No.
I wouldn't.
Do I see anything?
Yeah, no. It would be one of those things of if the players don't tell me they're exploring this room, they just keep walking. I'm not gonna do a mini, you know, I'm gonna ask them what do they do. And sometimes they'll say, well, we keep progressing. All right.
I'm a warlock. I went on a short rest.
Nope.
You just had one an hour ago. I know. I need another one.
Nope. Fuck your short rest.
I'm really sleepy.
That is one of the nice things about third edition since I'm running third again, I had to explain to a player that there are no short rests. It doesn't exist. You get one rest per day up to 8 hours. Or it has to be
really?
At least
that's starting in fourth?
Yeah, there's no short rest until after third.
No, that's weird. I thought that was like a common rule.
Nope.
No, it should be.
No, I'm not a fan of the short rest. Never have been.
I need to take a nap.
Like if you want to sit down for an hour, eat some meals and cast some healing spells on yourself to get some hit points back, fucking go right ahead. But that's what a short rest should be.
Listen, there are plenty of times when we're at the LARP and me sitting on logs after a fight and like, we ain't leaving for an hour.
Yeah, but I don't get spells back from that.
Well, you should.
I don't. You don't get any skills back. Best you can do is repair your armor.
I don't need skills back. I'm a fighter.
Anyway. All right. So you had a second story, I think, right?
So, actually, there's a part. I mentioned this to you last night when we were gaming, and there was kind of a follow-up on it. So, I'm designing the new anniversary edition module for the tournament running in July at Zenergy, and I decided to sit down with my daughter, and she was going to do some art, and I was just going to work on the dungeon for a little bit with some graph paper that I had, and we're just going to have a nice little daddy-daughter time. And so I start making a little dungeon, and she kind of goes through and colors a few things and is immediately just like, I'm done with this. So she asks what I'm doing, and I tell her what I'm doing, and I explain to her and show her the dungeon that I'm making. And then she immediately just starts pitching me ideas.
Which like, is actually fantastic. I love this.
Oh, you should do this. Oh, you should do that. And so her big idea was that she wanted to have a room that had three treasure chests in it. And that two of the treasure chests were actually the treasure chest monster. And I was like, what do you mean by treasure chest monster? And she walks over to where we have all the board games, pulls out the Dungeons & Dragons Trivial Pursuit game, says, this one, this monster here. I'm like, oh, a mimic. She's like, yeah, a mimic. It should have two mimics and one real chest. I'm like, okay, I can do that. That sounds easy enough. And then we start talking a little bit about some other stuff. And like, what was really like magical about this is that all the good ideas that I thought I had in doing this, she was also like saying the same exact things. Like, oh, you should have a pit trap here that slides into spikes and so they die. Like, yes, that's actually where I was going to put a spike trap. That's a good idea. I'll put one there. So either my 4-year-old is like this dungeon master savant, you know, or my dungeon creative skills are that of a 4-year or 6-year-old. So,
yeah. So, that's one of them you are going to be wondering about for quite a while.
So the best part was that later on she goes, hey, remember that treasure room? I was like, yeah. It's like, what, you want to change something with it? She's like, no, you should have it again, but backwards. I was like, what do you mean, but backwards? She said, the first time it was two treasure chests, one mimic. And so the second room was going to be two mimics and one treasure chest.
I saw that video.
Yeah, so I was just like, I can do that. That sounds evil and everything. So that's what I'm going to do.
You should have a sign over the door entrance as they walk in that, you know, put it in whatever language you want. But when they translate it, it says, guess the mimic.
That one. Oh, God, we were wrong.
You could even do a room. What you do is the first two rooms exactly like that. And then later on, you have another room exactly the same that says, guess the mimic, but they're all just treasure chests. Just the paranoia on your party when they step into that last room. Which one's the mimic? Oh, God, which one?
Yeah. I like the fact that all the good ideas I had, the 6-year-old also had. Yeah, so course. Either I'm having great ideas or she's just amazing at it. So I'm going to go with the latter and just stick with it for that.
Whatever's going to help you sleep at night, you know?
I'm getting plenty of good sleep.
That's good. Yeah. Speaking of you're talking about the Trivial Pursuit game, and I know we've talked about it on here before. You've played it, right? Yeah. I thought you had. I knew you owned it. Oh my God. We played it earlier this week. Oh my God. Some of it I'm absolutely amazing at. Like any of the blue questions, which are lore questions, typically Forgotten Realms, Dragonlance, Greyhawk. I'm really good at those. And like most of the other stuff I'm really pretty decent at. But then you hit those fucking questions. I think it's the pink ones about the modules.
Yeah.
I have to get lucky. No. I have to get so goddamn lucky. It has to be a true or false or it gives me the two answers and I have to pick one, because I cannot answer any of those things. I've never fucking played modules. I've never run modules. I don't know the name of most of the current modules.
What always got me with those questions is like when they asked for like what the codes were for the modules that,
oh yeah, yeah,
that certain things were. You're like, I don't know. Does anyone remember this? Like, what was the Against the Giants code modules?
We know for a fact that Luke Gygax knows, because he has told us when he was on the podcast some of them. We need to play this game with him, see how he does.
That's actually a good idea.
I would love to. That'd be amazing. Play Trivial Pursuit with Luke Gygax.
Yeah, I would like to play it. I just didn't memorize all the questions. You know, I got to be a tryhard about it.
I will never do that. Like, I also bought the horror Trivial Pursuit recently, and the only time I've looked at these questions is when we're actively playing it.
No, you can't do that. You got to memorize all the answers. So
no,
you win.
That's I don't care if I win. And
it's
honestly,
all about winning.
Oh my
holding
god!
Get over your family and friends.
I thought I knew horror movies, but man, that one is just rough.
Did you see the 2000? Have you ever watched the 2017 classic Aquaslash?
No, I've never even heard of it.
Well, I heard of it and I watched it this weekend, and I have to tell you, it's a movie. Look it up and watch it if you want to.
No, I'm good. I got other things
I'm
watching.
You need to look it up and watch.
I have way more Sharknado films I need to watch.
No, you need to watch Aquaslash, the 2017 classic.
But
seriously,
anyway,
watch it. It's great.
Anyway, I just had to bring up that I really hate those pink questions. when we were playing the game, I had all five pieces, and I get to that last one, and I think I failed it like 12 times in a row.
That's a neat part you did. All right, so what are your contributions to the podcast this week?
Oh, I was going to do mine last. I always like ending on a high note. We can do all it. Right. We can do it now if you really want to.
Let's go for the low grumpy note.
Okay.
I'm ready. I can do this.
You got this, man. You got this.
No, you got it. Go.
You want me to do mine instead?
No. Let's talk about Bigby.
Oh, Bigby. Okay. Well, you have to talk about this because I honestly, I don't know anything about it other than what you have told me.
And here we are. I thought we were professional podcasters. All right. So, Bigby's, what's it called?
Read the actual name of it.
Bigby Presents Glory of the Giants is coming out this August 15th and is set to become the next source companion module for new content in the Dungeons & Dragons 5e universe. It is absolutely limited to the following. Delve into unrevealed giant lore, including an overview of the heretical structure.
Oh, okay. Can you spell it?
No. Shit, I can't read. I'm sorry, guys. structure of the ordering of giants and giants' religion and ideas about the giants' organizations and societies across the multiverse. Adds giant-themed player character options, where adventurers can evoke the glory of giants with one new barbarian subclass, explore the vast world of giants with two new backgrounds, and unlock 8 new feats to unleash runic magic and wield elemental power. Display a wondrous collection of 30 magic items, including 3 illustrious artifacts, and offers a plethora of tools for dungeon masters, including lair maps, adventure hooks, encounter tables, treasures, and giant role-playing inspiration, and presents a giant bestiary. More than a third of the book is devoted to monster descriptions, lore, and stat blocks. Discover a vibrant ecosystem filled with a new giant kinds, 70-plus new monsters, and enormous creatures. I will say, overall, this book seems to be a really good book. It's a monster manual and a class supplement all kind of rolled into one.
if I was buying 5e, it sounds like a book that I would have purchased. I tend to buy the Volos thing, like Volos guides and, you know, Mordenkainen and stuff. Those are the ones that I get the most use out of. So it sounds like something I would purchase.
And that kind of brings me to the crux of the issue.
Yeah, where it becomes the Big B's book of money grabbing.
And when it becomes the Big B's book of money grabbing. So Hasbro announced that all books starting with Big B moving forward will be costing $10 more to purchase. Now, that doesn't seem like much, especially when you consider the fact that like everything has gone up in price. But it's pretty bad. And it kind of gets worse. So like if it was just like inflation is causing us to, you know, incur more printing costs, so we, you know, have to turn around and charge you more to get the book in your hands, you know, so be it. The book's been $50 for a long time.
And we do understand that printing costs have absolutely gone up. We all understand that.
Right. So we understand that. We talked to Jolly and the Canterco people, and they said that their printing costs increased threefold after COVID. So it's definitely a thing. But it's also like it's Hasbro, and like you keep reporting all these mass profits every single quarter with absolutely no issue. So does it really matter? Can you really do you have to be that bad?
I have two arguments about this whole thing. One, I've talked about it online with everybody, is the fact that, you know, we had Jeff Ashworth on here not long ago, and like his books, which are very high quality books, are $30. They are the same size as all of the D&D books, if not larger. They have a massive amount of content in them. And the only difference between the quality is that not all of the artwork is colored. That's really about it. And they're $30. They're $20 less than what WotC has been charging. And, you know, there's that. And I've already forgotten what my second argument was. It seems kind of ridiculous. Oh, yeah, I know what the other one. I think it's a case of WotC's sales are just down because of all of the bullshit with the OGL that they've just decided we're going to just try to make it up by just charging the people who stuck around more money.
I can't disagree with that. You know, mostly because the announcement was made by Hasbro and not WotC. It feels very like upper management made this call, and you.
I'm sure. Yeah.
So anyways, on the back of all of that, I kind of made a kind of like joking complaint about it because it is what it is. But they also announced too that they were going to start basically including a digital code for the book for D&D Beyond. That's great.
They should have been doing that for a long time.
Well, they didn't own D&D Beyond for a long time.
I know, but they still should have.
So, that's actually pretty great. That's awesome. But, they are only selling that on their own website, on the Wizards website. So, if you're a distributor of books, like a local gaming store, like Zenergy, you don't get that version. You don't get the version that has the hardback cover and the code. Why the hell not?
I can't think of any reason at all why they shouldn't be able to do that. Maybe
some security concerns.
Yeah, maybe there's a technical reason.
There's no technical reason. It's a 15-digit code.
Yeah.
They can supply it. They can make sure the book is wrapped in plastic or whatever.
Well, that's going to increase their cost. And if they
try. But then that $10 cost would make sense.
I know. Yeah. But you know them. They're not going to actually try to increase their own cost. They're only going to try to increase profit.
Right. So that then goes into another issue that I kind of discovered from our friends online and talking with the store owners here that I know locally. They might be cutting the collector's edition covers 100% to stores. So the only place you could get those would be through the Wizard store. And the collector's covers don't come with a code digitally.
What?
At least they don't now.
Okay.
The people that I talked to that run stores stated that not now, but starting with the Planescape book, which is the next book, that only what they called core stores are going to get the core edition book for use. Whatever that is, whatever that means, is unknown because that's not a term that they've used before. We have nothing to compare it to. And then on top of that, local stores won't be getting them. So our friends in North Carolina won't be getting the book. Anyone down here in South Carolina won't be getting the book. Are they referring to just maybe WPN stores, which would then include the stores that we know? Or they're including the stores that like are only in California that have that special rank to them, you know, the ones that got like the Magic 30th anniversary packs.
Right. Or like, are you in, you know, a massive store in Los Angeles or San Francisco or New York City?
No. Those stores, there's only five of them, and they're in California.
Oh, well,
never mind. Is it only those stores that are going to get the core edition books? I don't know, because core edition is not something that's ever been talked about before.
Yeah, I don't. I'm not even sure what that term means.
Right. Neither do I. But it seems to be that they're talking about the collector's edition books. Okay. So the collector's edition books cost more than the standard cover ones, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. They cost double, I think.
They cost $10 more.
Oh, is that all it was? Okay. Yeah. I've only bought one of them a lot. I bought the very first one. I don't remember what
either,
I paid for.
In either case, the cost for the book has already gone up, starting with Bigby. Okay. It used to be like the stores could get them for like $25 a piece, mm-hmm. and they would sell them for $50. That was the MSRP. Well, now they're selling them for $60, and it costs the stores $32 or $38, respectively, to buy those.
So rather than doubling their money, they're less than doubling their money if you sell the book.
So it seems like this increase of $10 is not on the MSRP side, but it seems to be on the distributor store side. So yeah. They might even go up even more because Wizards has turned away from having an MSRP. So we might be losing the collector's edition, and it might be standard only. The standard only that comes with the D&D Beyond code is only being sold from the Wizards store, and that kind of leaves the local gaming store just shit out of luck. Okay, so what I did now is, I've been buying the book from the Wizard store because I get the digital code, all right, and I get the book whenever it shows up at my door, usually early, and I do get early access to the content before the book gets released. Like, I'll get access to the book on August 1st versus mm-hmm. August 15th, and that matters for me and you because then me and you can read through it and discuss it before it goes live. So that's kind of why I buy it through the store. And then anyone who wants to still use the D&D Beyond is still going to buy it through the Wizard store. So now I've cut out my LGS. Well, I want to support my LGS. So what I've been doing is I've been buying the collector's edition cover from them. But now Wizards is going to stop doing the collector's edition cover at local gaming stores.
Right.
So what the fuck?
Yeah, so now if you just bought the, you know, I guess you could buy a normal edition from the local gaming store, but that doesn't really benefit you at that point, other than helping out your local gaming store.
Right.
At least buying the collector's cover, you know it's going to maintain value.
And I don't really like the collector's cover. I don't like how it looks on my shelf. I've been buying them because I want to support my store, and that's literally the only reason.
Yep.
You know, I mean, I like the Rimes of the Frost Maiden collector's edition cover. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
But I've seen the Big Beast collector's edition. It looks like shit, in my opinion. No offense to the artist, but the foiling or whatever they did to make it all gold, it doesn't scream giant stuff to me.
Yeah. Most of the collector's covers haven't really jived with me either. I like the Volos one, but that was also the first one I bought and had the giant Mind Flayer in silver on it, and it was kind of fucking cool. But
yeah, I mean the original covers, the original collector's edition covers were really cool.
They started getting real sort of fancy with them later down the road. I know the Fizzman's dragon one. I hated the way that one looked.
Yeah, there's no dragon on the damn thing.
Yeah, it was all just sort of gem colored weird. Like it just didn't jive with me at all.
And like I said, they're neat and some people like them, but it's not for me. And like the Bigby one is definitely not for me, but I'll be buying it. The keys to the Golden Vault one, like there's a vault on it and there's keys. So I mean, like, yeah, I guess. I mean, that one seems to work.
And like you guys, we got to talking about it last night about what people actually buy, and like, you know, much of what we were saying is kind of speculation just from what we see and what we know. The people I play with, one of them care. I won't even say they care about the collector's covers, but they do buy the collector's covers. The rest of us, if we even buy the books, yeah, we just want the basic book. None of my group actually plays online, so we don't give a shit about the D&D Beyond code. So them just selling normal books to our local gaming store, the way you're talking about, won't actually affect my playgroup. I don't know about everybody locally. Where I live, I'm kind of out in the boonies, so we don't really have a normal gaming store. We have a Magic the Gathering card shop, but
yeah.
most of our books are bought at Second and Charles, which is an offshoot of Books a Million, I think. So it doesn't really affect us much. But
what the issue comes down to, actually, is I was talking to The Zynergy is owned by two people. So I normally talk about the owner. I'm talking about Andrew, but there's also a guy named Steven who kind of runs the business side of the business, and he does the ordering. And so I was asking him about if he sees through his distributor websites, if he saw what the core edition for Planescape was going to be, and there's no information yet. But he did show me the Bigby book, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And this was the shit that he's having frustration with, okay?
Yeah.
So the Bigby book, he can place his order right now. And he can get the Bigby Glory of the Giants standard edition book in his standard order, okay? He just places it online, and he's good to go. He can even place an order for the other Dragon supplement book that's coming out as well.
Okay.
Which is just some like off product that they're doing that has dragon information in it.
Okay.
I think it's just a rehash for kids kind of thing. Right. I don't really know. But he can't place an online order for the collector's edition of Bigby's right now.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, why he can't, I have no idea. And neither does he. But he said starting now, for whatever reason, he can't buy those books. He has to call the distributor up directly and give him the number that he has. And then he said the distributor will tell him whether or not he'll be able to fulfill that order.
Yeah, okay, that's a dick thing.
But he said that's not on the distributor side. It's that they're not getting that many of those copies in. So that leads me to believe that it's actually like Wizards is making the collector's edition a real collector's edition, or they're getting people ready for the core edition that comes out in Planescape, where you have to buy it through other stores. And then he brought up the next issue is like, even if you were to buy the standard edition Bigby covers, no one's going to buy it from the store they have to sell it. They have to sell it to make a profit at or near MSRP.
Yeah.
And they can't because Amazon is selling them at only a couple dollars higher than the distributor cost.
That's always been an issue with Amazon.
That's always been an issue. And so, like, I've seen his stock in the store. No one's buying any standard edition covers. They only buy the collector's edition covers from them. So,
I go to Second and Charles, like I said, which is where, you know, they're an offshoot of Books a Million. They've got a shitload of money, but their stock is always full of books. I don't really ever see the collector's covers there. I have, but that's been a while. But yeah, like any book that comes out, they get, you know, a few dozen of them, and I don't really see them move very quickly.
So I'm worried about my store, you know, just from a general like.
No, yeah, yeah, I get that.
Why is Wizards Hasbro like dicking them around? And it kind of even falls over into Magic as well too.
Okay? Well, real quick, if they're making the collector's cover into a proper collection, like collector's cover, I'm actually okay with this.
Well, they don't call them collector's covers. They actually call them alternate covers.
Yeah. Well, I think in the term of comic books, like it used to be a store would have to order 20 or 25 of a regular comic to get the variant cover issue. And they'd get a couple of those, you know, and I always had thought that that's how it was with the D&D ones, but I guess not.
No, it was just an alternate cover. They've been able to put in the orders. People always want the alternate covers because they're the alternate covers. You know, we're kind of like bred to always choose.
Yeah, you get the variant, even if they're... Hell, they could have printed more of the variant than the regular ones. And yeah. People would still buy the variant because you title it that.
But like, their pricing has been dickish on a lot of things recently.
Yeah.
The price for Magic the Gathering packs has gone up, and... That's not new to anybody, I think.
No.
But
no.
It hurts the bottom line. So now you have people who are only buying one thing or another, and you compare that to prices of other competing Magic the Gathering trading card games that are out there, like MetaZoo and Flesh and Blood and the DBZ and One Piece and all those other new ones.
And Pokemon, which is still killing it.
Yeah, I miss Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh! Yeah, their prices aren't going up.
No, and they... Oh my God, they just... my local gaming store, that's how they survive. It's not with Magic anymore. Like they still do Magic business, but man, they're surviving simply from Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh. That's what everyone's fucking playing around here.
The next set that comes out is actually the Lord of the Rings set. Okay?
Yep.
And what has been very interesting about that is that the price for the collector's edition is just, and a normal edition is just through the roof. Okay? So just as a quick aside, the price to pre-order a collector's booster box of March of the Machine, the previous standard set, started off at $243 and is currently now worth $210. Okay.
Okay.
I mean that's what happens, okay? The collector's edition for Lord of the Rings started at $495. Okay.
Is it okay? I know it's not that much now.
It is currently selling at $350. Now, the difference is that this is still a month away. Okay. And it's stabilized at $350. So my question is it just because it's Lord of the Rings that it's that high? Maybe. Which is great because it sounds like it's going to be a cool set. But also, that also affected the base price, where the base box draft set, for those that understand what it is, those are like what people used to buy for Magic the Gathering before the collector's boosters came along.
Yeah.
That started at $200 and is now currently sitting at $145.
My guess, and this is totally just a guess, is that the price for those collector's ones are so high simply because there is a chance of finding the One Ring. And I think we've talked about it on here, where they were literally making a single copy of this one card. It'll be the rarest card in all of Magic the Gathering. And the estimated value of this thing, if you've managed to find it, is $1 million+. Like, it's insta-millionaire if you find that card.
So, maybe that's what's driving the prices up, but a lot of it's, again, speculation on my part, but it's kind of confirmed from when I was talking with the store owners is that this set alone has started off at a higher distributor cost to the store before anything else said and done. So did they increase the price with Lord of the Rings because it was Lord of the Rings, and then they're not going to lower it for the next set?
How much are the basic boxes, like the standard draft boxes? You said it earlier, I think.
For the standard draft boxes for Lord of the Rings, started at $200, is now $145.
Yeah, like that's that's just kind of ridiculous. Like, I, Magic the Gathering has always been pretty cheap. Like, I won't say how, you know, like when the game first came out, obviously it was really cheap, but I know the cost of a box or just basic stuff was $120 or less in general to get 32 packs of cards. Now, I have not touched any of that in a few years, so I am definitely out of the loop. But if it's gone from $120 for me as a buyer, not a store, just somebody trying to buy a box, if it's gone way past $120, they got a serious problem.
And like I said, like the store has to buy it and resell it, you know.
Yeah, like the stores were generally paying $70 to $80 a box.
So the draft booster box for the previous set is currently $106.
For a store to purchase?
No, that is.
That's retail. That's what it retail. Sells for. Okay, yeah. then they're not completely out of whack there.
But the distributor price has still gone up.
Yeah, which means the price of the boxes will go up.
No, people aren't paying that much for them. That's what I'm saying.
Not, whether people pay that much or not, that's a different story.
So the new books, the end story for all this is that they're limiting the supply, they're increasing the price, and they're overall just making the books harder. Part of that seems to be going kind of buying into the plan that they're trying to move everything digital and to get you to buy the VTT version of D&D 5e, D and Done, as it's called.
Yep.
And I'm not going to use it.
Like, I mean, I for one can't wait to start my Pathfinder 2nd edition game.
Yeah. That's the thing with Pathfinder is, like, you know, I try to keep my finger on the pulse, at least locally, with those things. And there is a Pathfinder Society in the area, but it's hardly ever run. And people play Pathfinder, they play it at home when they don't talk about it. It's like a secret cousin or something like that.
Yeah.
He's the one we don't talk about.
Well, the stores, they support Dungeons and Dragons groups. I mean, you've got your whatever the one you run on Wednesdays. So it's not surprising that you're not hearing about it. But most tabletop is just done at home. That's where the vast majority of it is done at. It's done at home. So, like, I definitely have friends who play Pathfinder games and run Pathfinder games. Locally here, you know, most people probably play D&D, but I would imagine the vast majority of people play D&D just because it's what you see out there. Oh, our buddy Muffin was telling me that apparently Critical Role has already started their new game, streaming it.
Oh, have they?
It wasn't him. It was one of my other players. But yeah, that's what I've heard. So I have.
Are they using D&D still, or do they swap?
No, their system. So I'm gonna have to go and actually watch this stream. Actually, I want to write me a note right now so I remember, because it's been a while since I've watched Critical Role, but I'm very curious to see about how this works. Because that's a big marketing failure by WotC right there. Losing Matt, because shitload of players.
I don't think Matt Mercer would have done anything with them, you know, given the past history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But
did you know he voices Ganon in the new Legend of Zelda game?
I did not. That's kind of awesome. Does he sound just like McCree?
Actually, yeah.
It's high noon somewhere in the world.
The Triforce is somewhere in the world.
All right, well. Let me go ahead and talk about my nonsense. So since we just came from a bit of a downer of a conversation because we're talking about WotC, I'm hoping to pick things up a little bit here. You know me and my stupid ass list. It's a thing that I love. Well, tonight we're going to talk about more stupid magic items. Did you ever find that one you were looking for?
I didn't find the one I was looking for, but I went to ChatGPT. And I asked ChatGPT to give me a list of, give me a list of 10 of the worst magic items. And here's the list.
You know, I was going to read mine, but go ahead. You go right ahead.
The first one is the Wand of Tickles. This wand is supposed to cast powerful spells, but instead, it only tickles the target, making it more of an annoyance than a useful tool.
Sounds like your daughter made that up.
The Ring of Invisibility, limited edition. This ring grants the wearer invisibility, but it randomly turns visible and invisible every few seconds, making it ineffective for any stealthy endeavors. The Amulet of Flatulence. This cursed amulet causes the wearer to emit loud and embarrassing flatulent noises at the most inconvenient times. The Boots of Squeaking. The boots are incredibly loud and emit a high-pitched squeak with every step.
That's a curse magic item right there, for sure.
The Dagger of Bluntness. Despite its menacing appearance, this dagger is incredibly dull and incapable of cutting through anything, rendering it useless in combat. The Cloak of Intelligibility. This magical cloak causes the wearer's speech to become garbled and incomprehensible, making it impossible to communicate effectively.
There's so many good curse magic items you're reading off.
The Crystal Ball of Confusion. The crystal ball is supposed to provide visions of the future, but instead, it shows random and often nonsensical images, leading to confusion and frustration. The Glove of Butterfingers. These gloves make any object the wearer tries to hold slip right through their fingers, resulting in frequent accidents and dropped items.
AKA Curse of Fumbling.
The Potion of Forgetfulness, instead of granting enhanced memory or knowledge, this potion causes the drinker to forget everything they knew for a short period, leading to confusion and temporary memory loss. And last but not least, the Necklace of Endless Hiccups. This cursed necklace causes the wearer to suffer from an uncontrollable hiccups that can last for hours or days, making it nearly impossible to concentrate or perform any tasks effectively. You know what?
Rough.
That's a real condition people can get.
I was about to mention that. Yeah, that is a real thing. There are some people who have hiccuped for years.
I heard it's one of the worst things that could happen to you.
Oh, I would imagine that would be terrible. Like, that would suck. My brother actually has issues with hiccups. Some mornings when he wakes up, he'll hiccup on and off for about an hour. That would be just awful. But half of that stuff you read off is just, it's cursed magic items. It's, you know, like the Boots of Squeaking, they appear to be boots of stealth, and then you put them on and, oh no, boots of loud noises.
I mean, that's just ChatGPT being ChatGPT. Yeah, you can't make new things up. So obviously somewhere out there in the world, people have already made that item.
Yep.
And ChatGPT just regurgitated it back. So
speaking of cursed items, I found a list somewhere on Reddit because God knows where I ended up. The first one is called Swordproof Armor. This armor is completely impossible to damage with a sword. Any sword swung at the armor will pass right through it, doing absolutely no damage to the armor. Sucks to be the guy on the inside of that armor, I guess. The Really Broken Clock. Despite its hands and gears not working at all, this clock is always wrong, no matter what time of day it is.
That's actually pretty great. Yeah, not gonna lie.
It's not right twice a day. It's just always wrong. Let's see. The backwards hat. No matter what you do, how you put it on, or adjust it, as soon as you let go of it, this hat is backwards when you wear it.
That's got to suck.
Yeah. I'm putting this on to block the sun. Why? No block sun. The Fountain of False Illusions. When you look at this fountain, you're completely convinced that it is an illusion, except when you're standing in it or holding the water in your hand. It's actually a real fountain, though. this was one of my favorite ones. The Fair Deck of Cards. A deck of cards that, when used to play blackjack, will always result in every player getting 19 with 3 cards. Fucking communists. It's always the communists. They're trying to make everything equal.
I saw a video today of a blackjack dealer dealing out blackjack cards. And so basically he just got stuck in the repetitive motion of it. So like he dealt out the first card, and he dealt his out, you know, face up. Then he's got the second card to all the players, and they're all face up, so everyone can see what everyone has. And then he goes to Gates to put his next card up, but he's supposed to flip it over so you can't see what the dealer has, so you only see one of his two cards. Well, he kind of like sets it down face up, and then freezes because he realizes his mistake. Everyone can see the cards. He had a queen and a four. And then he flips it over and sets it down and just continues playing the game like everyone didn't just see what his card was. So
poor guy.
And, you know, it's all on camera and stuff. So either he got fired that day, or they had a very good laugh and, you know, definitely made him the butt of all jokes for a while.
Yeah, let's just hope it was the butt of all jokes for a bit.
I was thinking of, it's like, it would be amazing to me if one of the players didn't notice that and still lost his hand to that dealer, but everybody else won. Like, how bad would you feel after? It's like, dude, he showed us the cards. You knew we had a 14.
Yep. I mean, yeah, it could be that, oh, well, I fold, or, you know, hit me. Like, you could still lose that if you know what he has and you're trying to beat him. Like, if the dealer had a 14, you know, or 13, maybe you try. Well, I guess it'd be a 14, but maybe you try to beat that. Probably not, though. At that point, I think most people are either going to win or fold, make it easy on themselves. All right, so there's a handful left. The reverse bag of holding. A massive sack that has only enough capacity to hold an acorn.
I love that one.
The fitting gloves. They are fancy silk gloves that automatically fits any creature who wears it, but will always have one extra finger.
What if you have six fingers?
Then it has seven. And if you give it to a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle, I think it has four. That's how many they had, right? Or did they have five?
They had three.
Yeah, okay, so it'd have four. I remember my turtles lore, hell yeah. The blindfold of true sight. A thick leather blindfold that gives the user the ability to see through disguises. If he can see. So you have to put this leather glove or leather blindfold over your eyes to see through disguises, but it's over your eyes, so you still can't see.
So if he had blind sight, could you tell?
Yeah. Yeah, I would say that works. Or trimmer sense. The Reveler's Mug. A mug that cannot be turned upside down. If one attempts to do so, the mug changes shape in their hands so that it does not spill and is always right side up. That seems like a useful item.
Yeah, but to say that's a useful item there.
Yeah. And this is just another rude one. The Acrobat's Boots. Allows one to balance perfectly on any surface less than 2 inches wide, like a ledge or a tightrope. Walking on flat ground, however, will cause the user to fall flat on their face.
That's an easy fix. You just wear ice skates as well.
I don't know how that would fix it if you're still on flat ground.
No, but you're stepping on the skate. The skate's on the flat ground.
Oh, okay.
You still got to maintain your balance on the skate.
Yeah, on the skate, yeah.
So you have perfect balance.
But since the skate is... Okay, I see. You attach the skates to the bottom of it.
Yeah.
All right, I follow. That solves the problem.
Yeah, and then you never fall over, and you always have blades at the bottom of your feet.
Yeah, you always have perfect balance. Awesome. And you have weapons. I can't be disarmed unless you take off my boots.
And then I just stumble for a bit.
Yep. But anyway, that's my list of stupid magic items. I always love finding these things.
I can't remember who it is, but there's some D&D content creator on YouTube that basically reviews the worst, lowest rated magic items on D&D Beyond.
Right.
I don't want to steal his gimmick, but we could definitely start doing that if people like that. You know, tell me on Discord if you guys like that. We'll start doing that too.
I would actually like to do one episode where we do that, where we discuss the worst magic items.
Yeah, the worst magic items ever.
See if we agree or disagree, because these are actually going to be actual items, right? Because they're in the D&D Beyond.
No, but you could have homebrew stuff in there too.
Oh, can you? Okay, well, never mind then. But either way, it'd still be kind of fun to do that somewhere down the road.
Okay, so I went to the magic items. I went to the homebrew magic items. The very first item is the Bean of Tiamat. And then Terrence, the Demi-Lich Skull. The Vape Pen of Arnold, Champion of something. Chaos Knife. 10mm Repeating Pistol. The AARMM, the Autonomous Arm. Reinforced with magnetic magic. Real quick, what is the Bean of Tiamat? It's a potion, very rare, a magical bean that Adam thinks is the Bean of Tiamat that he read about in stories. Here is the actual effects of the bean. Intelligence. The intelligence of the consumer decreases by 5 to a maximum of 8. Clumsy. That's not how you write that. It would be decreases by 5 to a minimum of a number. Anyways, clumsy, you get
maybe he meant maximum of 8,
but you won't decrease to a maximum.
I know, but maybe it will go down 5 points, and if you're above 8, it goes to 8. That's a stupid way to write it. He probably meant minimum, but maybe not.
Clumsy, you get disadvantage on dexterity saving throws. Wish, the consumer of this bean is allowed to imagine one thing that exists and is created into existence with a maximum size of 10 feet by 10 feet and a maximum worth of 50 gold pieces.
Oh.
So. notes set base to blind sight. It makes you blind too, but gives you blind sight.
I mean, if it gives you blind sight, then it doesn't matter. Well, blind sight's only 10 feet, so there is that.
10mm repeating pistol. The 10mm repeating pistol is a futuristic marvel blending sleek design with unmatched firepower. Its compact frame, smart optics, and magnetically charged ammunition propel 10mm rounds at incredible speeds. With advanced targeting systems and customizable features, this pistol sets a new standards for precision and efficiency, embodying the future of personal armament. It's up to you to decide whether a character has proficiency with this firearm. Characters in most D&D worlds would have blah blah blah. It doesn't have any stats to it. It just, you get a 10mm repeating pistol that fires bullets at high velocity, but does no damage.
Did they ever put stats for the modern weapons in any of the current 5e books?
Yeah, it's in the DMG.
That's what I thought. Okay. So you just get a 10mm.
The Bean of Tiamat. Okay. What is Terrence the Demi-Lich Skull?
Yeah, that's the one that interested me. Let's read it.
This is the restrained skull of a Demi-Lich. The top of the cranium is cracked and has a metal handle that has been attached by bands of brass and wrought iron. A large wrought iron nail protrudes from the side of the skull. This nail dampens the conscience of the Demi-Lich Terrence, rendering his mind inert and malleable enough to cast spells without question. Removal of the nail renders Terrence to be conscious and able to act on his own accord. He may cast spells at random, at DM's discretion. Otherwise, Terrence's mood will determine via dice roll. One action to remove / replace the nail. He becomes either vengeful, sad, happy, angry, smug, or intimidating. Basically, how he uses a spell to hinder the party or help the party. This item acts as an arcane focus with innate access to spells of the necromancy spell list. This item has 4 charges. Additional charges are expelled as the spell level goes up with each respective level. So first level spells is 1 charge, 4th level spells are 4 charges. Regains 1d4 charges at dawn, and also 2 cantrips and 3 choices of spells that you can set each day.
Okay. That doesn't even sound like a bad magic item, really.
That's not a bad magic item, honestly.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can sort by like lowest rated, see what the worst one is here real quick.
Sure.
The best ones are the Boot of the Vigilant by Matthew Mercer. Of course it is. If you didn't hear it, my eyes just rolled.
Yeah. Yeah.
The worst rated magic item is the Drill Pendant. The Drill Pendant is a wondrous item artifact that requires attunement by a fighter or ranger. By the way, it says requirements attunement by a capital B Y A fighter, comma, or ranger.
That's great punctuation there, but all right.
A pendant with a small cone drill attached to it. The drill is magic-infused gold, and its handle that attaches to the pendant is magical-infused platinum. The drill glows a soft green from the core of the drill. It resonates with the soul of fighters and rangers that touch the drill pendant. It gives you a sense of almost unstoppable and to do the best for your friends, family, and team. The drill pendant can recharge a single magic item, single magic item's charges once per long rest.
Okay. Is that all it does?
That's all it does.
That's not
even... It makes you feel unstoppable, and you recharge a magic item.
That's not a bad magic item at all.
That shouldn't be the worst.
No, that I would use that in a heartbeat in game. Yeah. Oh, I just burned every charge from my wand of magic missiles. Bam, full charges again.
The tie for the worst magic item is called the Goliath Permafrost Staff. A magical staff made by Goliath. Either end of the staff is blue and frozen. Either end, just choose, I guess. Any who touch the ends, even the wielder, takes damage. Proficiency with a quarterstaff allows you to add your proficiency bonus to the attack roll for any attack that you make with it. Notes, versatile. So,
does it do damage?
No.
Okay, so it's just a staff that you don't want to touch the ends of.
Because if you do, you take damage.
I mean, honestly,
but what that damage is.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, that's pretty bad. I don't know about the worst ever, but it's pretty bad.
Someone right here with a negative 10 that has a plus 4 flail frost.
Yep. Okay, I think
we've done enough. You can't have plus anything higher than plus 3. Actually.
It's D&D.
Did you know you can get plus 6?
It's D&D. As a DM, I can hand out whatever the hell I want. So, yes.
By raw rules, you can't have better than a plus 3. But did you know by raw rules you can get a plus 6?
I'd be curious to know how, but all right, go for it.
So technically...
Technically,
push up your glasses.
Yep.
Magic ammunition can go up to plus 3. Magic bows can also go up to plus 3.
Ah, and they do stack.
And the bonuses stack.
There you go.
So you could, and I would only advise this in this one scenario... Provide one piece of plus 3 ammunition to a player.
Now you just need to make a magic quiver that adds plus 3 to everything fired out of it. Oh, but wait, you can't, because the magic creation rules that they're coming up with don't allow it.
Magic creation rules. You can't. Just us now.
Yeah, that's you can't. Yeah, that was my grumpy moment for the podcast.
All right, get out of here. Bye, Craig.
Bye, Craig. Bye, Chris.